Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we talk about protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in these uncertain times. We have a great interview for you today, and we will be back with that in less than 60 seconds on the Holistic Survival Show. And by the way, be sure to visit our website at holisticsurvival.com. You can subscribe to our blog, which is totally free, has loads of great information, and there's just a lot of good content for you on the site. So make sure you take advantage of that at holisticsurvival.com. We'll be right back.
What's great about the shows you'll find on jasonhartman.com is that if you want to learn about some cool new investor software, there's a show for that. If you want to learn why Rome fell, Hitler rose, and Enron failed, there's a show for that. If you want to know about property evaluation technology on the iPhone, there's a show for that. And if you'd like to know how to make millions with mobile homes, there's even a show for that. Yep, there's a show for just about anything. Only from jasonhartman.com. Or type in Jason Hartman in the iTunes store.
It's my pleasure to welcome Harvey Biggleson to the show. He is a doctor, and he is going to talk to us about his book, Doctors Are More Harmful Than Germs, How Surgery Can Be Hazardous to Your Health, and What to Do About It. Harvey, welcome.
Oh, I'm glad to be here, Jason.
Well, it's good to have you. You know, this is quite an interesting topic, and tell us a little bit about your background and how you became interested in this. I assume it was treating patients, and that's probably how it evolved, but I don't know for sure.
Well, that's basically how it evolved. I went into medical school to help people, and I came out. I was a trauma surgeon in Vietnam, and I was an eye surgeon and then in Princeton, New Jersey. I got frustrated after several years as no matter what I did, no matter what, whether it's surgeries that I did or I gave them medications, the people were never happy. You never got them back to normal. You always were doing something to them. And very frankly, I got very, very upset with the whole thing until one day a patient came in to me and she said she was going to be healed by a psychic. And I said, okay, you know, I'll watch that. It was the most interesting thing that came into my office. And I wanted to do surgery on her because that was the name of the game at the time. She had bad glaucoma. Well, within 6 weeks, she was healed, and I was just blown away. I eventually went up to see this guy. My wife went up first, and I went up to see him, and he started telling me about a whole concept called holistic medicine. I had never, ever heard of that concept. I never knew what that was, and he sent me to an MD named John Diamond, who's written a lot of books back east, a fascinating physician, and he just opened a whole new universe to me. And within several months, I had quit traditional medicine, and I moved to Arizona, and I started to search for other ways to look at life and how can I improve the health of the body instead of stopping the disease. How can I function better?
This is a pretty amazing statement coming from you who was trained as a surgeon. I mean, and yet now you advocate that patients avoid surgery if at all possible. And that's a pretty big switch in your thinking, wasn't it?
Oh, it's a major switch. First of all, number one, crisis surgery is necessary. Let's separate crisis surgery from elective surgery. Big difference. You can break a leg, you're in a car accident, you need surgery. But elective surgery. I mean, right now, 20% of new medical students are going into plastic surgery. 20%. I mean, that's incredible. Plastic surgery, I call that barbaric cosmetology, okay? Go to a spa and get that done. I see plastic surgery if your car accident, your face is cut apart. I did plastic surgery. But to go and do this now, cosmetic surgery, just to make yourself look better, that's not medicine. I mean, you're taking this body, and I don't care what you think of this body, But this is no accident. This is a magnificent creation, whether you believe in a God or nature or evolution. It's a magnificent machine. For you to have the nerve to cut it apart and say you're going to improve it, incredible. Absolutely incredible, the arrogance of the system. It frustrates me what's gone on with medicine today. It's become so money-dominated, PR-dominated, and curing a person has never been done by traditional system. That's a whole other story.
One of the interesting things that I heard you say before is that in the last 100 years, the medical industry has not cured a disease?
Yes. We're breaking down to crisis and chronic. Not one chronic disease in 100 years has traditional AMA-backed allopathic medicine found a cause nor a cure in 100 years. Now, if you're a 100-year failure, what makes you an expert? Okay, think about that. And you hear that on the news, and every expert say this, expert say that. I tell my patient, you know, if your car's transmission went out, and you went to the mechanic, and he said he never fixed the transmission in his life, A, would you leave the car there? Of course not. B, would you listen to his expert advice?
It makes total sense, but I do want to just drill down on that a little bit. I mean, didn't they cure polio? Or I guess not cure that, it, but vaccinate that, against it?
Infectious disease. Let's not talk about it. That's a whole other. We could do a whole show on that.
Okay.
But I have a major question on curing polio, because something goes on. We have a smallpox epidemic, and in the 1940s, we start to give a smallpox vaccine to everyone. Smallpox disappears completely, but in the 1950s, polio becomes an epidemic. Now, polio before that was spot or miss. Now it's an epidemic. We then come up with the polio vaccine, and polio is completely gone. But MS skyrockets in the 60s. Is it just changing? Is the vaccine working? I have major questions about that. We're given vaccines now. I think the average 18-year-old's had 37 vaccines. Measles, mumps, rubella. I had those as kids. You don't need vaccines for that. I have real questions about what we're doing to the system and what's going on and how the body's reacting. I'll tell you that even though we got rid of smallpox, and polio, has it morphed? And again, that's infectious disease versus chronic disease.
Speaking of chronic, you talk about chronic inflammation and how it affects a patient's overall health. I mean, what is the big thing about inflammation, first of all? That really is disease, isn't it?
No, it's not disease. It's the way the body heals. There is a chart, it took me years to study the chart, and I think it's based on Nobel Prize winning work called homotoxicology. There are 6 phases to disease. The first thing the body gets, if you get a noxious agent, it tries to flush it out, excrete it. If it can't excrete it, it will create an inflammation to heal it. If it can't get healed, now the body will start to, the problem will start to get impregnated in the system, deposited in the system, and the tissues will start to weaken more and more. And, you know, 100 years ago, we didn't have that many surgeries. The average Medicare patient today has had 9.5 surgeries. And surgery, as I've said before, and I say this a lot, it's theoretically, you know, it's a knife hitting into the system. Just because you're asleep, your cells are not asleep. They know the cell wall has been cut. There has been a dam now formed, because a scar will form. And the body's actually got 5 diaphragms in it that it's constantly expanding and contracting. And scars block this and pull this. So the worst injury you can receive, I've asked that around, it's not things like broken bones stuff. It's surgeries. Some of them are necessary, but today a lot of them are not necessary at all. You know, they tell women you don't need your uterus at the age of 50. Everyone do a hysterectomy. Horrendous concept. If someone like Creator didn't want that, they would have made something so you drop the uterus out at the age of 50. Nature does nothing in vain.
So what happens? Take the hysterectomy example. I mean, my mother had a hysterectomy many years ago. What is the downside of it?
Well, you're causing a massive scar, A. B, that scar, the pelvis is actually the diaphragm inside the pelvis. The pelvis is expanding and contracting 1 millimeter 8 to 10 times a minute. You've just now scarred and locked that pelvis down. The tailbone actually moves 8 to 10 times a minute and pumps up the cerebral spinal fluid, which is very nourishing for the nervous system. It pumps up the spinal canal. The meningeal membranes are actually in motion. They're expanding and contracting 8 to 10 times a minute, about a millimeter. We get waves of fluid that are coming up to our skull. Our skull is 22 bones that are interlocked. They are not fused. MDs don't understand that. Osteopaths do. As fluid gets up there, The skull expands, pressure comes too great, and it contracts. We got a whole hydraulic pumping system. Scars block that, they pull that, they torque that, they do all sorts of things. And you think of the injury. I've asked people many times, what's the worst injury? If you were awake and someone wanted to take your gallbladder out behind 7-Eleven, you would know for the rest of your life how damaged you were. But because they do it in an OR, you think you're okay.
What about the anesthetic part of it? That's interesting that you say you may be asleep. Your brain and nervous system, right? But to some extent is obviously anesthetized. But your cells know that there's an attack, and you call surgery a legal attack with a knife. That's a very interesting way to look at it. A rather big statement.
It's a pretty brutal statement, but that's, you know, I'm trying to wake people up. And before you go and run and get this elective surgery, I have a note on my desk here about a woman that the doctor wants to get her, and the nurse will plead to me, get your uterus out now, get your ovaries out now, because the ovaries, you don't need them now, you're in your early 50s, the only thing that can do cause cancer, we get it out now to prevent cancer. That, I mean, they're forcing the woman to do this. To me, what's going on in medicine today is what I call a Rodney Dangerfield joke. Rodney Dangerfield states that he goes into the doctor and says, hey, doctor, do you have anything to stop me from aging? And the doctor gives him a gun.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, in that example that you just made, I mean, there is an increased likelihood of cancer. So isn't that being proactive and preventative?
It's the same thing. Why don't we take out a man's prostate? Every man, if we live long enough, will get prostate cancer. Some will get it at the age of 50. Some will get it at 150 if we live long enough. Why don't we take a man's prostate out at 50? Why are we just doing it to women? Plus, I'm going to tell you something which, if women hear this, it would shock the heck out of them. During the sexual act, the spasm at the end of the orgasm is actually a lot of the uterus contracting to try to bring the sperm up. Cut that uterus out, and the woman loses that spasm. Okay, so I'm not so sure so many women would want to elect to do that. And what happens is they tell the women, you're bleeding now, you're going through menopause, you got fibroids, you better take it out. After menopause, the fibroids shrink up greatly.
I mean, is this about money? Is the AMA just recommending all of these quote-unquote elective surgeries and procedures just to increase doctors' billing to insurance companies?
I really believe a lot of it's about money. When I went to medical school, doctors were the high middle income to really low rich or something like that. Now the insurance companies have lowered the whole show. Doctors have to see more patients. Their income is much less. And I basically tell people that most doctors today, and it's, you know, when a new patient comes into the office, they got what I call drool coming out of their mouth and a knife hidden in the other hand just in case they can find something. Procedures, they want to do procedures today for two reasons. Not just to make money, but if they don't do the procedure and something happens, some lawyer will sue them.
Right, so they're covering liability sort of in advance.
Right. They're covering the liabilities, and then the patient comes third.
But the reason they're covering that liability with this proactive, if you will, elective surgery is that it's mandated by the AMA's sort of standard of care, right? That they say this is the thing you should do, and the connection there maybe is insurance companies lobbying Congress to make the AMA adopt that type of standard of care, or how does that all work?
Well, you know, the standard of care, I once had charges brought against me that I cured a person with an illegal means, and the doctor said to me, we don't care if your patients are getting better or worse. We only care if you're doing the work in our way scientifically. I mean, you think of that.
Scary statement, yeah.
I mean, it's frightening, okay? And this is the control of the system. It's all, right now, 90% of all the literature and all the journals is sponsored by pharmaceutical companies. So if they want you to write something about their drug and you write something nasty, you ain't going to get another offer to do that again. This is what's going on in medicine today. I liken it to Orwellian. We don't believe it. It's fascist. Okay, it's controlled by the industry. But if you look up the World Health Organization statistics, you'll see the U.S. is ranked 37th in the world. Okay, France is number one. U.S. is 37th in the world. In cost, we're number one and 72nd total in delivery. Unbelievable how poor the U.S. is. And yet we hear we're so good.
Right, right. So this discussion could never be complete without talking about the current political climate and Obamacare, which I think is going to be an absolute unmitigated disaster. Not saying that everything's working perfectly now, because it's certainly not. But, you know, what are your thoughts about the political situation?
Well, what's going on now? I've been fighting things like Obamacare now since the early 80s. This is antitrust. Healthcare is states' rights. Now, the state of California, we have MDs, we have osteopaths, we have chiropractors, we have naturopaths, and we have acupuncturists. All licenses primary care. Obamacare will only pay for one of them. My daughter is an acupuncturist, okay? She's absolutely brilliant. She'll get paid if a doctor recommends her. So this is that's antitrust. It's unconstitutional. They're picking out one to pay for, and that's just not equal, okay? I've been fighting that thing with attorneys for a number of years. Finally, the AMA got the control that they want through with Obamacare. It's now they're the ones, they're the kings officially. Insurance will pay for them. They will pay me $250,000 to cut your heart out of your chest. They will not pay me $10,000 to fix it in your chest. And they'll probably report me to the local agency to try to get my license away for fixing it in a way that they don't like.
How would you fix it in my chest?
Well, the last thing you do is surgery, number one. Number two, I've been using a lot of stuff from Europe, okay? We're so far behind. The French are number one in healthcare, okay? They eat like crazy, they drink like crazy, they smoke like crazy, they're thin as rails, and they're number one in healthcare, and they live about 5 to 8 years longer than us. We're making stem cells. We're looking at stem cells of the future. And our stem cells, we're going to make it what I call Las Vegas style. It's going to cost you $250,000 to get someone to have a bone marrow transplant, to get the stem cells, to get your own stem cells and grow them. The French are making stem cells from pig embryos that you drink. And the first time I tried it, I had a patient with Alzheimer's, pulled her out of Alzheimer's within an hour. And gets in through the mucous membranes of the mouth. The FDA lets it in as a foodstuff because she can drink it. And look at how fancy the U.S. is going to do. It's going to cost you a fortune. The French stuff costs you $100 to $300 a dose. Now, you need to do repeated doses, but it works.
I mean,
tremendously.
You know, I've just got to ask, though, how could something so successful really be suppressed, kept secret? Wouldn't everybody just be running over to France? I mean, gosh, it's not like communication isn't so global and instant nowadays.
How are they going to find that out? Okay, number one, most of the United States watches TV. Most of the commercials on TV are basically pharmaceutical industries. You always see this beautiful girl running through the woods. Okay, and they tell you she's got some terrible disease, but if you take this pill, she'll do so much better. But there are side effects. They're death, they're homicide, they're suicide, they're this, they're that. You got 50 side effects on that. But yet you're showing this beautiful girl, and people fall for this type of stuff. By the way, there's no such thing as a side effect. I put a pill into your mouth, it's a direct effect. It will have to happen.
Good point.
But this is propaganda, and I think there's almost what I call a dumbing down of civilization, of the United States public, to believe this propaganda. And, you know, everyone's got to go for checkups now. You know, I don't have a problem going for a checkup, but you're going to go to a checkup for someone that's never fixed anything? I have major questions on that. It's all PR and propaganda.
You talk about germs, and you talk about the terrain. Everybody knows what a germ is, pretty much. A lot of people are germophobic, you know. What do you mean when you refer to the word terrain, though? You're talking about the body, right?
It's the soil of the body, okay? It's you know, if you have a fertile soil, certain things will grow in you. If your soil is lousy, other stuff will grow in you. This is basically what it is. It's not the germ, that's the problem. It's the type of soil it's growing in. We're taught a streptococcus is always a streptococcus, a staphylococcus is always a staph, this virus is always that, and it never changes. No. Trees change, grass grows, everything in life changes. Well, so does a germ. That's the big story. Germs can become an E. coli germ in the intestines. If the intestines swell, that germ will swell and now become a candida. The germ will morph and adapt to the terrain. Algae will grow in a stagnant pond. You can take still water and you put it outside for a week. You'll see garbage growing in it. You'll see germs growing in it. Where do they come from?
Yeah, you say the terrain is everything, the germ is nothing.
Right. It's the terrain. terrain that it's growing in. That's the key. It's the body that it's growing in. We're talking about it's a germ. Everything's accidental. We're going to get hit by the germ. Things like the swine flu, people are afraid of that. The flu is not, we all worried about a pig getting ill in Argentina is going to, the whole world's going to get ill, or a parrot in Hong Kong, the whole world's going to get ill. Flus only happen at the change of seasons. Well, what happened to the change of seasons? The weather is changing, the trees are changing, the grass are changing and adapting. Well, so do we. If our membranes and if we're toxic, our nose runs and we call it a flu. If we're basically fairly healthy and the system is open, we adapt to the change. But if we're congested and toxic, the system overruns, and they blame it on the germ, on the parrot, or what, on the swine that started the whole thing. But no, it's the body adapting to the change in the atmosphere.
That makes perfect sense, because all people have germs, but only a few become ill, right?
That's correct. They blame it on the germ. But it's the people that are blaming it on the germ haven't found the cause or cure of anything truly in 100 years, okay? So we're listening to this whole concept, and that concept of the germ theory was really, you go back in history, supported by Rockefeller, who dies at the age of 97, never taking a drug in his life. But you can make money. The germ theory disease, you can come up with the magic bullet philosophy of therapy. So it's now it's name the disease, and now you have the magic bullet. And that's exactly what you have on everything.
It seems as though there's almost a whole field to create new diseases and afflictions and names of things that we all should be conscientious or maybe obsessive about, frankly, that never had names before. Are we just getting smarter and more aware, or are we inventing things that don't exist?
It's the pharmaceutical industry that keeps on inventing names. The name of the game is the name. Everything is a name. Everything, something's new. We're going to find the germ that's causing it. In the meantime, we're going to give it a name, acute and chronic fulminating garbage or whatever it is. They like to give it long names and initials of things. Everyone's got initials of things. You know, ADD we talk about.
ADHD, okay? Yeah, right.
Everyone, you know that. The only people that don't have ADHD are retarded. Okay, we're active. Your mind is thinking. It's here and there. Unless now we're on a show, we're focused. So now we'll run away. But most of the time, it's all over the place. We're creating here. We're thinking here. And now you're going to take a pill to stop that and narrow our thinking down? We're dumbing our creativity down by doing that stuff.
Yeah. The mind is not a linear thing. It's a very random thing. It has all sorts of random thoughts that pop in, but they meld together and form new ideas. And that's really how a lot of discoveries, I think, are made.
And they call that ADD. Okay, they put a name on it, and they can put a pill on it. They name everything, and they put a pill on everything. You know, it's you go to a doctor for a checkup. To me, I tell you people, the best preventive medicine, don't go for a checkup.
Really?
Okay, because they will find something and they will do something. The only perfect being is the Messiah, and I have not seen him or her. They will find something, they will do something.
What about going for the checkup and then maybe being very cautious about taking the advice?
Number one, if you're going to go for a checkup, I would find a state where you have a licensed naturopath. We have that in California. They're great. At least they're looking from health point of view, not from a disease point of view. An osteopath learns both aspects. The MD only learns disease. They do not learn health. They then learn how to stop disease by giving drugs or surgery, okay, or burning it. They do not know how to fix the person. So if you're going to go to a checkup, find yourself an osteopath that can do blood tests and stuff. At least they know and I understand things of structure, which MDs do not understand, and it's very important. Go to a naturopathic physician. If they can do injections and stuff like that, they're much better. If I had to do it over again, I'd become a naturopath that can do injections, or I'd become an osteopath. The MDs are very, very, very limited.
Injections of what?
Well, I do. If you're scarred, if you've got a scar problem, that's we call that an interference field. The Germans have been doing therapy on those scars, and we inject it to loosen it up, and I inject procaine, which is based on 2B vitamins besides being an anesthetic. And we loosen those areas up, and we work on structure. To me, there were three great, what I call divine sciences that came through history. In Asia, acupuncture came up, which is the electrical supply of the body. In Europe, homeopathy, but the remedies are too weak nowadays. The philosophy of homeopathy, how disease moves in and out of the body, homotoxicology, to me, is right on the money. And in the United States, osteopathy chiropractic instruction came up. The founder of osteopathy, Andrew Taylor Steele, stated, disease cannot exist where there are no obstructions. If you have an obstruction in your flows or your fluids, you will have a stagnant pond, and it's in the stagnant pond the garbage will happen. Break the stagnation, and that's the key. Structure is, in evolution, function created structure. The giraffes grew the necks higher because the ice age made the trees higher. When you treat a person in biological medicine, the law is structure precedes function. Open the structure up, expand it, do good manipulation, break the scars, loosen the scars up because they're constricting the structure, and now you can start cleaning the person up better and strengthening them better. And
so those three, are those what you refer to as the divine trinity of medical philosophies, those three things?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, they
great.
Are.
Yeah, very
and
interesting.
And you put them all together.
Let me take a brief pause. We'll be back in just a minute.
You know, Penny, sometimes I think of Jason Hartman as a walking encyclopedia on the subject of creating wealth.
Well, you're probably not far off from the truth, Rich. Jason actually has a 6-book set on creating wealth that comes with over 100 hours of the most comprehensive ideas on investing in business. They're in high-quality digital download audio format, ready for your car, iPod, or wherever you want to learn.
Yes, and by the way, he's recently added another book to the series that shows you investing the way it should be. This is a world where anything less than a 26% annual return is disappointing.
Jason actually shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets that are untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I like how he teaches us how to protect the equity in your home before it disappears and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
He's recorded interviews with Harry Dent, Peter Schiff, Robert Kiyosaki, Pat Buchanan, Catherine Austin Fitz, Dr. Dennis Waitley, T. Harv Eker, and so many others who are experts on the economy, on real estate, and on creating wealth.
And the entire set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered with a savings of $385.
Now, to get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series complete with over 100 hours of audio and 6 books, go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back and collect checks every month, just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you.
When you talk about terrain, I just wanted to talk about one more thing on that subject, if we could, Harvey, and that is the issue of pH balance. And you had mentioned to me before we started the show talking about cancer and the pH level of the body and that kind of thing. Tell us about that, if you would.
Okay, the pH balance, that's really important. Cancer only comes when a venous blood is too alkaline and there's not enough oxygen. Oxygen and cancer lives, it's called an anaerobic disease, it lives only on pure sugar and no oxygen. So oxygenation and breathing is major, major important. We rush around here and there, but if you did good yoga breathing and you really did stuff like that, less chance of cancer. The stresses, again, that makes our adrenal system work, that makes our cells acid and we dump in alkaline waste. So stress really pushes the pHs around, more important than diet. As far as diet goes, what I believe in is several things. Here's the French, like I mentioned before. They eat like crazy, smoke like crazy, drink like crazy, thin as rails, and yet they're number one in the world in healthcare. And I think one of the reasons is they eat over 2 or 3 hours. The day is over. They kick back. Us Americans shove packaged foods in 10 minutes, and then we rush to watch TV or something like that. They chew the food, they kick back, they mellow out. We're rushing. You see people coming out of a McDonald's with a burger in one hand, a Coke in the other hand, and they weigh 350 pounds, and they're rushing someplace. That's the United States.
The obesity in the U.S. is just, it's unbelievable. I remember hearing a World Health Organization stat that said, for the first time in human history, there are more obese people than there are malnourished people. It's crazy.
And I think that's chemicals. And let me tell you why on that.
Because chemicals, hormones probably too, right?
What's that?
Probably hormones, too, in the meats and so
well,
forth.
Well, hormones are part of it. It's what we've done to the system. In acupuncture philosophy, there are five elements: fire, air, water, earth, and metal. Now, when you take these foreign pills that were taken, this is earth debris. The body's going to try to get rid of this garbage because they're poisonous stuff. But if it's blocked up with surges and can't get rid of it, the body will then try to bring in water to try to flush out, and it'll start to bloat more and more. So to me, the more garbage we eat, they tell you these things, they've been adulterated, calories are low, these are low-fat things with 10,000 chemicals in it. Those chemicals, though, are creating the bloat. Our body's trying to wash it out, and we're blowing up more and more. The healthier people eating good, fresh foods and taking their time to eat. Frankly, you can't believe the amount of food I eat at dinner. My wife goes crazy because it takes me at least an hour and a half to 2 hours to eat dinner.
Interesting. Very, very different than the American way, isn't it? How does looking at a patient's living blood give you a window onto their condition?
It tells you everything. What amazes me is I'm only the third MD in United States history to look at the live blood.
So distinguish, if you would, live blood versus a conventional blood test, maybe.
What they do is they take a drop, they take your blood and they put it on a slide and they stain it. Now, the stain is a poison and will fix things for immortality. So 10 years from now, they can open up the drawer and they can see the slide and look at your slide. However, if it's not stainable, it's invisible. And if you look at my website, okay, which is drbiggleson.com, drbiggleson.com. If you look it up, you'll see movies on that. There are things that are moving in the blood. When I saw that about 35 years ago, it changed my entire life because we have so many living things in the blood, and we're taught the blood is sterile. When I see so many living things, it's so important. It's got to be important. So I've been studying that for years. And frankly, if you dropped a brick on your toe now, your blood would show it. Your blood would show the shock, the injury. It would show different things about what happened. I have studies of blood, and it took me years to believe this. I had two teachers that worked with me. If you give me a woman that's pregnant, I can actually show you formations and things in the blood that are called symplasts that will be and look like the baby. And you can see that again on my website. And I've been doing that, looking at the blood for years. Like I said, the early 1980s was my teachers that started me on this. Third American doctor in U.S. history that's done that. No one else does it. It's unbelievable to me. And you can see so many things. If your blood is dirty, you can see it. If your blood is clean, you can see it. If it's weak, you can see it. If it's dirty, you have to clean it up. If it's clean and strong, then I can push your buttons and start to open up more things. So the blood will tell me. Clean, dirty, tired, et cetera, et cetera. It'll tell you exactly what's going on.
So is that what you talk about when you say rebalancing the system of a patient?
What I'm trying to do is trying to get the blood back to, if it's dirty, I'll clean it up. And you can actually see the treatments before and afterwards. We'll treat a person. We do what's called neurotherapy or the scar therapy, and we do osteopathic work, and you'll see the blood before and afterwards. And if it's dirty and it's caused by, I believe the scar is blocking up and causing what's called the interference field, and it's creating this inflammation, and we treat that and release that, the blood will show you the difference right afterwards. And you can see the difference in the blood, the before and afterwards, and it's major important. Now you know you got the treatment right. Okay, the blood tells you everything. Life is in the blood. Everything is in the blood. If you're angry, it's in the blood. If you're angry for a week, it's different. And if you're a genetically angry person, it's still different, but it's there.
How do you do a living blood test, though? I mean, you don't stain it like the traditional blood
test. No, I just take a drop from the finger. It's that simple. Put it on a slide, put it on a microscope, and the patient sits in front of me, and they have a TV screen, which they can see it, and I look at it in the microscope, and we go over the blood. We have about at least a half hour. We go over it. I'll talk to the patient, and I can match the blood to the patient. And right now, I can take a drop of your blood and tell all about the patient just by looking at the blood.
It's amazing that conventional medicine doesn't do that. I mean, is it because it needs to be preserved to be shipped off to the lab, or what?
No. Well, to me, conventional medicine reminds me of, frankly, is the moron that lost a quarter on a dark night was looking two blocks down the street because that's where the street lamp is. I once had the chief of hematology from Tufts New England Medical School in my clinic in Mexico. He was interested in my immune work. Now, Boston is the academic mecca of the universe. He's the chief of hematology there, and he wouldn't come and look at the microscope because he said, why would anyone look at the live blood? This is the chief of hematology at a Boston medical school, okay, refused to do this. How uncurious are you? If he looked in that blood, it would have changed his whole philosophy of what's going on. I mean, every time I show it to someone, and any medical physician, they see these things move around, they're stunned because we're not taught anything about it. You're taught the blood is sterile in medical school.
Well, I do find that higher education has some big handicaps regardless of the field. It seems as though the more educated a person is, the more they become convinced of their way and the more inflexible and closed they become. I mean, obviously that didn't happen with you, but would you agree that a lot of your colleagues in medicine are that way? I think you would.
They believe that they are doing the best there is. But the average doctor lives 4 years less than the average person. I had a woman named Ann Kelso. She designed the Earth Shoes. She was a yoga master. And I spent a year with her. And she said to me, do you know why the average doctor lives 4 years less than the average person? She says, deep down, they know they're wrong. They know they're full of it. And it eats away at them. It really ate away at me. I mean, I was really, I didn't know what to do after 3 or 4 years of practice. It was, I'd come home, I was suicidal, I'd reached the pinnacle of everything, and no one was happy. I was making a lot of money. I said, there's got to be more to life than this. And it was very depressing for me until I found the answer the other way of looking at it.
We've got to start wrapping up, but I got a few more things I want to cover real quickly. Back in 1981, you co-authored the Arizona Homeopathic Medical Practice Act. What were some of its groundbreaking things? I mean, you said you moved to Arizona. Now you live in Northern California, but why Arizona?
Well, Arizona, I moved to Arizona because, number one, I wanted to change everything the way I looked at things. And then there was a clinic in Arizona that did holistic medicine. It was based on the work of America's most prolific psychic, Eddie Casey. So I went out and spent a year out there and studied Eddie Casey stuff, and it was very, very interesting. He taught me, I'd look at asthma, he'd have 50 asthma readings, but he taught me on every case that the human being has got an electrical body and a physical body, and you treat the electrical body in its own way, and you treat the physical body in its own way, and he talked about that, and you got to treat them both. Okay, and he was the first one that brought up those concepts to me. And to me, the structure then is very, very important. He got into the structure, and the energy body relates to the emotions. He got into those aspects of it, too. So, you know, that's what really changed my life, the way Casey looked at it, and it made sense. And I started to go that way, and patients started to get better. That was exciting.
So what were the big groundbreaking things about that act that you co-authored?
Oh, that was... What happened is doctors were getting persecuted for practicing, quote, alternative medicine or non-traditional medicine. Like if you go into Quackwatch, you'll see that I got censured for illegible handwriting. They were going after...
Don't all doctors have illegible handwriting?
That's what the judge said. I had to take it to get it overturned, okay? But that was... He said, is this a doctor joke or something? But you'll see it on Quackwatch. You'll see that I was censured for illegible handwriting. They started to persecute the alternative physicians. So there were lay people that were trying to get a law through, and the governor and the legislature said, we don't know who you are. I mean, we don't know if you're a weekend wonder what you are. We're not going to give you a law. Well, I went up to the governor's office, Governor Babbitt at the time, and I went to the head of the legislature, and I sat down and I spoke to them, and I said, well, we have MDs are doing this. Why can't we make it that you have to be a licensed MD first or licensed osteopath first before you can become a homeopath? And they liked that idea. So that now gave us our own agency with our own peer review. So we set up standards to practice alternative or holistic medicine. The word holistic was in the law, and we had to define that, and that became under our jurisdiction. Nutrition became under our jurisdiction. So that law separated the powers and allowed the freedoms to physicians like me to practice without being worried. Now, I'm very proud of that. There's over 200 physicians that are licensed because they've been harassed in other states. They've moved to Arizona where they're getting licensed and they can practice freely.
You know, this is interesting. Looking at Quackwatch, it almost seems as though this is funded by the AMA. I mean...
Oh, without question.
Is it really? I mean, everything they talk about here is just attacking everything that you hear. And I did this really interesting show, a constitutional lawyer who has sued the FDA and litigated with them about how you can't make the most basic claims of prune juice will relieve constipation. You know, everybody knows this is true. Yet if you say that on the jar, you'll be put in jail. It's just unbelievable. incredible how they have just suppressed so many. They've suppressed free speech in so many ways.
They have suppressed, and it's all money control. And I just give you an example of the suppression of the money control recently. They just approved a drug a couple days ago. $93,000 it costs for a shot. It is given to prostate cancer cases that get 4 to 6 months to live. It may extend the life 1 to 2 months for $93,000 a shot. In 1972, they had a pill called Honvan, which was a hormonal blocker. Every Mexican doctor at a Mexican clinic knew that that worked 1,000% on prostate cancer. They took it off the market in 72. It was 50 cents a pill. Now they're talking $93,000 a shot, and it's not going to save your life even. You're still going to die in 1 to 2 months later. It's money, money, money. You look at the chemotherapy drugs, $100,000, $200,000 a shot. That's incredible, absolutely incredible and outlandish and stuff what's going on. If it's too cheap, they won't make the money. That one prostate cancer drug, it cured everyone, but for 50 cents a pill, off the market it went.
Unbelievable. Hey, I'd like to close, Harvey, with some talk about the role of attitude. Back when I was, I think I was about 17 years old, maybe 18 years old, I became interested in Norman Cousins, who, of course, you know, and he wrote Anatomy of an Illness, very famous book. And you know, the story is that he basically cured himself of a rare blood disease that was incurable at the time through attitude, through laughter and watching Candid Camera reruns and Groucho Marx and stuff like that. Psychosomatic medicine, I very much believe that there is something to that. One's attitude affects certainly one's place in life, how far they will go, their level of success in their business or career, their relationships. Of course, attitude is vitally important. Why wouldn't it apply to health?
Oh, it 1,000% applies to health. Attitude sets the whole ball game up. Okay?
But if you go to the AMA, they won't acknowledge that, will they?
Well, the AMA is a failure. Well, you know, they have failed on everything. They're always going to say, no, it's a virus, or this is something in your genes. They're going to tell you stories like that. But attitude sets you up everything. Every disease has a very specific emotion. There's a fellow named Hammer in Germany who came up with H-A-M-E-R. He came up with concepts of different emotions in different diseases. I totally agree with them. I've come up with similar concepts. You'll find every left breast cancer case, if you did a psychological profile, will basically be the same psychological person, different than a right breast cancer case. Every ulcer case we know is worrying a hole in themselves. Every disease has an attitude behind it. Every single disease. Hamer's work is probably the best talking about that, of how it affects you. But the attitude sets you up. And I give an example of a mother yelling at two children. One gets asthma, and the other one walks away saying, Mom's having a period. Okay? It's how it affected them and how it was going to take. But the attitude sets you up without question. But I don't call it psychosomatic. I call it psychogenic.
What's the difference?
Psychosomatic is you think it's going to happen. Psychogenic is, no, you keep that emotion. It will definitely physically happen. It will physically change your genes. It will physically change your physical body. Psychosomatic, it's just in your head. No, it reflects in the physical body.
Very, very interesting. Well, Dr. Harvey Biggleson, thank you so much for sharing this with us today. The book title is Doctors Are More Harmful Than Germs, How Surgery Can Be Hazardous to Your Health and What to Do About It. And I tell you, the book is well-referenced. It's just fantastic. So really, thank you, and keep up the good work. This is a very interesting topic. And do you want to give out your website again?
Okay, it's www.drbiggleson.com. That'll explain a lot of this. This is one of the books that's out now, but I think people get that. Look at the website, look at the book over there, and take care of yourself and start to be wary of what's really going on out there, because we're really being programmed. We can take care of ourselves. It's not that hard.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one more thing. You wanted to do a call out to people listening for them to have their providers contact you. Tell us about that, if you would.
Yes. What I would like is, I want to set up a network of providers. I'd love to have their providers contact me, because I can help them get the patient better. What goes on right now is providers are like the Dutch boy at the dike, just putting their finger in, stopping the leak. The traditional physician is using it with a pharmacy. The alternative is using it with a vitamin. I want to talk to these providers and teach them how to rebuild the dike and make it much stronger. That's a whole different ballgame. There's a lot of things in Europe to regenerate the system. I tell people, if you ran a 4-minute mile today, I can get you running a 350 mile by maximizing your performance. I want to get providers involved in it. I want to talk to them because everyone's got creative ideas. I feel like sometimes I'm out there on my limb by myself. I want to get other physicians to talk to us, to communicate with us, and set up almost like an international network of providers that are communicating through this. And to me, a microscope is a key because no one looks at the blood live. When you look at the blood live, there's so much you can see in there, and I'd love to get that spread around.
Very interesting. Okay, so it's drbiglesen.com. That's the website.
Correct.
Where providers can contact them. Thank you so much, Harvey. Great talking to you today.
It's been a great show. Thanks a lot, Chase. You have a good one.
Now's your opportunity to get the Financial Freedom Report. The Financial Freedom Report provides financial self-defense in uncertain times, and it's your source for innovative, forward-thinking investment property strategies and advice. Get your newsletter subscription today. You get a digital download and even more. Go to jasonhartman.com to get yours today. Thank you for joining us today for the Holistic Survival Show, protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Be sure to listen to our Creating Wealth Show, which focuses on exploiting the financial and wealth creation opportunities in today's economy. Learn more at www.jasonhartman.com or search Jason Hartman on iTunes. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, offering very general guidelines and information. Opinions of guests are their own, and none of the content should be considered individual advice. If you require personalized advice, please consult an appropriate professional. Information deemed reliable, but not guaranteed.